Bacha, would you like some paper? Did you change any of your religious practices when you came from Europe?
Not my parents did. I did.
All right, but you came at 9, and we're talking about when you became older, when you changed.
No. I personally, myself, did it on a sly a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up the Sarovsky last night. I started to read at that time, myself. Mother only showed me how to read the olive base. So I said, yes, from the olive base, not there yet.
Uh-huh.
I can say feel as a careless and it's good to get up to
it.
And,
it won't be this love to purpose.
Yeah, it's not grossish. And, of course, my father and mother didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in the Grosian neighborhood in the South Hills.
This is after you were married.
After I was married. Yeah, well, I was going to tell you about my childhood. After that, the no schooling, I had to go to work.
Yeah.
This was the first thing I did.
Even though you were only 9 years old?
10.
10. Did you have any elder brothers or sisters?
No. I had an older sister.
And
she married right away when she came.
Oh, she was old enough to get, she was old enough to get married.
Yeah. She was 17, so she
and she found a husband
right away. Right away, we got a husband. Her name is Newton, and she got married.
So you was the next breadwinner.
Yeah.
What did your father do all this time? Was he still working with the pick and the shovel all this time?
No, he became a peddler.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What did he sell?
What he sold, what he picked up, what they call a rat peddler.
Mm-hmm. You mean odds and ends,
odds
aprons,
and ends,
dresses,
clothing, and paper, and bottles, I don't know, all those things. And he made $1, $1.50 a day, $2 a day was a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you helped?
And I helped. First I started with $2.50 a week, then I made $3 a week.
I want details on your work. Your sister-in-law told me you worked in a stogie factory. Did you get the...
A soap?
Stogie
factory, that's
Did
right.
you get the job right away in stogies?
Yeah.
Where?
For seven weeks I had to work for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Where?
Where? Up here, way up, you know where the reservoir is, on Bedford Avenue, way up. Bedford, it was called the Standard Straw Factory.
Who's that, Scheffler?
Huh?
Scheffler, Samuel Scheffler.
You know him too? No.
I know the name. He was a Romanian.
That's right.
He was one of the first Romanian Jews in Pittsburgh.
Is that so? Yes, sir, he had the factory. And there was, and that's a chapter in itself.
There were other children your age there?
Yeah, several. And this is when there was a decree they should stop the child labor. So I was a non-lawful stogie maker. And they put me in a barrel. They gave
what?
Me, wait a minute. When they had inspectors, and the inspectors went to look if there's any children working. But they had a little tube light where they used to call upstairs, and they said there's inspectors coming. So they took all the children under the arm, stuck them in a barrel, covered them up with a sack in the tobacco barrel, and there we lay.
Oh.
And it was piecework.
So you lost out when the inspector came.
And they were sitting there talking, and whoever put me in the barrel forgot to take me out. And I thought they were still up there. I was afraid to open up. Nearly choked them. The children nearly choked to death. Waiting for somebody to tell us if we can come out now.
Oh.
And this way it went on and on.
How long did you work in Stogies?
8 years.
So were you involved in the beginning of the unionization of the
Stogies? I was the first one that went on strike, and it was always come out in the winter, and I had to carry a plaque forth and back. That's what I froze my feet again, all over again. Because shoes I only had on the top here, big high top, not the shoes, no soles on them. tell you the whole truth.
How long were you on strike?
Oh, sometime it lasted a whole winter.
But it didn't work?
No.
The unionization. Do you know Harry Slocum? Harry Slocum.
Slocum? I worked with his father there in that factory.
I interviewed him. He lives at Riverview Apartments.
Still living?
He's 90. He's 90. And he told me when he was 13 years old, 14 or 15, he was involved in the unionization.
Yeah.
move of the Stovey workers.
Yeah.
And another one who told me that her husband was involved was Bella Swartz.
Yes,
you know
Schwartz,
her?
Yeah.
Her husband was
my
involved.
Girlfriend.
She lives at Riverview also.
Oh, I'd like to meet them. We'd have so much to talk about.
Well, how long are you going to be here?
To the end of the month. I'm waiting for a wedding to take place.
It's coming soon.
My niece, my brother's granddaughter, is getting married.
What's her name?
She's Price.
Oh, one of the Prices.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I bet if you just went over to visit Riverview Apartments and you just looked at the list of people who live there, you would find a lot of your old buddies there.
Yeah, I know.
And you could sit around and chat. Yeah. Anyway, Mrs. Swartz moved in there, I think, just about years ago when her husband passed away.
Yeah.
Her son has a
drug. Another one, because Wolfson just passed away not long ago.
You know who told me a great deal about this? Someone who was younger than you, but whom you may know, who's American-born, Henrietta Chotner. Because her father had a Stovey
factory. Yeah, Chotner, they called him.
Yeah, well.
Well, I didn't work for him.
No, but you know the name.
Yeah. She lived in one apartment house, like.
She works for the Hebrew Institute.
Yeah.
She's a teacher there. She's a bookkeeper. And she knows a lot about these things. Another one who told me about these things was Mrs. Goldblum, who still lives in the Hill District.
Well, she got a rather, what her is her maiden name?
Chinitz, if I'm not mistaken. She's from Minsk, Kobelnia. But her husband's uncle, Goldblum, Abraham Goldblum, Federal Drug, they had the big, also a big cigar place. Federal something or other. Goldblum's Tobacco Company, they called it. He recently passed away, A. Goldblum. But there were a few different companies.
Oh, sure, many little factories.
Little factories. Some became very
in the basements, in the backyard, and they, we would call them a chicken coop. They opened up a factory.
Amdursky
then, yeah. Loads of them.
Mr. Amdursky was one of the people who was interviewed.
Yeah.
And he remembers his father's place. He mentioned that his father's
place. Well, the children worked after school at night, just like they
you
did.
You started off, after your 7 weeks, how much did you make?
After
your 7 weeks apprenticeship, how much
did you make? $2.50 a week. Then I worked $3 a week. When I quit, I made compound $5 a week.
What year did you quit?
Yeah. It's the year I was married.
Oh, so you remember?
In 1910.
So you were making then $5 a week.
$5. So my little brother, when he became 12 or 13 years, because he went to school a few years, he had to go to work in a box factory. And he got hurt over there, which he never told anybody, not the factory people, not at home. He had his fingers caught in the press where he was printing the boxes, the labels on the box.
And he never told anybody?
No, he never told anybody. And to this day, he has no feeling. He has numb fingers over here.
He was afraid.
Hmm?
He was afraid.
He was
afraid.
They
would fire him.
And he let me try him.
So you didn't, weren't actually a member of a union. You went on strike.
No, I became a member. That's why I went to the Pledge? No.
You became a member. Was this the IWW?
I guess. Yeah. We had speakers coming from way New York to speak for us.
But the IWW, the Wobblies?
I guess. That's what they call them then, yeah.
The Industrial Workers of the World.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Slocum says that at that time, they wanted Gompers Union to help them, the cigar makers, and the Gompers Union said no, because the stogie makers, it's not a craft, it's not a skilled craft. After all, the stogies were in competition with the cigars.
Yeah.
So the only ones who were willing to stick their necks out and come and unionize were the Wobblies, the IWW. So he says they are the ones who came and unionized. And actually, in 1912, well, 1913, the strike was successful, and they finally did get them,
yeah.
And then the stogies became unpopular.
Yeah.
The whole business just collapsed.
They moved away, or something happened, which I don't remember right now, that they hit. All of a sudden, they vanished.
Well, according to...
They went to Kentucky, where the tobacco was growing.
Also, cheaper ones came in from Cleveland. And during the First World War, cigarettes became popular,
yeah.
And it just pushed the stogies out.
But some of them moved to Kentucky, where the tobacco was growing. And this is where the big company had already machines to do it.
That's it.
Not the people. They didn't want to handle
They didn't need you anymore.
No.
Do you remember the names of some of the people who were active in the strikes and so on?
Oh, it's so hard. It's Schwartz. I know there was one man that... Name was Schwartz, a young fellow, young man. He was very active. And there was a young man, Oshry.
I know the name.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
He used to speak for us.
Was he also a Stogie Lacher?
Yeah,
Stogie
Lacher.
I've seen his name. I think he was a Zionist,
Oshry.
He was a Zionist, I think.
Yeah.
I think
no, a socialist.
Socialist. I've seen his name someplace.
No, socialist.
What about the people from the Workman's Circle? Were any of them in the Stogie?
Yeah, we were all the whole Hill District, all the Jews here. There was no other outlet, any other business. Now, for instance, New York, so they had the needle.
They had some needle trades here, didn't they?
Very little, very few. And they were downtown in big buildings and so forth, factories.
So the Stogie industry was the Jewish trade?
Yeah, this was thought. Well, Graham, too, they worked there. See, there are different departments. There were rowers, and there was bunchers, and there were, I even forgot how you call them, strippers.
What did you work as?
I rode a rower, made them, and then I became a packer. Used to pack them in the boxes and so forth.
Would you remember what the health conditions were? I read someplace that there was a high incidence of tuberculosis in these places.
How couldn't it be?
You were breathing in these rooms.
No, worse than that. In that big factory where I worked, this Standard Tobacco Company, mm-hmm. had over 100, I think, or more people. And there was only one bathroom for men and women. And you had to stand in line.
Over 100 people, you say?
Over. And you had to stand in line to get into that one bathroom. Men couldn't hold it anymore. And they did their business in the tobacco. And when you rolled, you had to have paste to make the little curl up there, you know, to finish it off. It shouldn't come apart. If you know how
spit.
It's made. Then you go always like that. You spit on them or you lick your finger through.
Mm-hmm. So you got the germs just spreading through the whole place.
How I didn't get the and then when you sweep up every night, your table and the floor, mm-hmm. everything so dusty, dried up on the floor, they break and they make a dust. And it just like you go in into a smokestack from the mill here. That's how much dust and dirt was on the floor.
So if one person had TB and coughed and everything, and went...
Coughed right in front of you. He sits out, there's tables on this side and tables on that side. And when he coughed right in front of you, mm-hmm. right at you.
Do you know how many people who became sick with TB?
Right to that color. Thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner until it passed out. Wonderful boys, a few of them, or maybe three or four. They came out of the yeshivas in Europe. There's nothing to do here. They took the factory. Worked overtime. A candlelight. By a light which I guess flickered. If you ever seen it. Did you ever see a flicker?
No, I know. What do you mean? Gas mantle? You mean?
Not a mantle.
Not a mantle.
Not a mantle. But it was a pot with a slit in it.
Mm.
And you put that little thing like a...
A wick?
Eichrit, as Javier's.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
I guess that wasn't a mantle, like a cap.
Yeah.
And you pushed it in into a little socket, and it had a slit,
mm-hmm.
and when you turned it, you, with a match you had it lighted.
Mm-hmm.
It only left, just like a lamp with
mm-hmm.
kerosene oil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And these young men died from TB, and girls too.
One, especially, that sat right beside, right across from me, and I remember him. He was so good looking, light curly hair, and tiny decolleté. But that was his trouble, that nobody recognized it at that time. Very thin. And he sang such beautiful songs, Yiddish songs developed from Europe. I remember him, I forgot his name, though. I would like to mention his name. But it's gone. Then again, the Slavkin.
Slavkin. Not Harry Slavkin.
No, I think it was his father, Mendel Slavkin, I worked with. It's a geschichte von...
And the interesting thing is that many Pittsburgh Jews whose grandparents did this don't know what it was like. It's like a hidden...
Well, of course,
story.
You wouldn't go and tell you. My children can't hear. If I started telling this story, oh, Mama, why tell us all these sad stories? You want me to cry?
Mm. Well, it's very important to know these things. But it didn't. That this didn't come from nothing.
We always wished that our children should never experience. I get along for my throat, excuse me.
No, look, I can understand.
Because
you recall how hard you worked as a young child. What does she do? She plays.
She said it is good.
Turn around, Batya, I don't want your feet on the chair. It's a very...
How old is she now?
She'll be 7 soon. My mother went to work when she was 11, Frau Schneider, in the... And she says she used to leave before the sun was up and she'd come home after it was dark. She worked for a year with no salary. When she was 11 years old, she started and tell me how.
Well, I had 1 year of schooling.
Oh, let me get that because I want to hear about your school.
Just 1 year, that's all.
Where did you go to Franklin?
Franklin School. On Fifth Avenue. Well, there's a high school there on Fifth Avenue, kind of over the Invader Street. Walk down to Franklin every night.
In the daytime or at night?
Daytime.
A day school as a child?
Yeah.
Were you in which grade did they put you in?
Well, they put me in the first, but I was too big, so they put me to 3.
Mm-hmm.
And in the third grade, I went in, I guess about, well, see, we came in July.
Yeah.
August, in September, I started. Then I stopped in June, so how much?
So you went one year, that's 2 terms,
One school year. But it's only 9 months.
It's only 9 months. You learned, though.
I learned a little bit, yeah.
You learned a little bit.
That I was...
The alphabet and...
I was sitting, but I was working already. I used to watch out, if you could see through the window that thick, but that's... And I'd see a truck pass, and I was trying to read on the truck, but at night. Was able to make out, for instance, laundry or ice cream.
They had night classes for adults from 1906, but you were too young to go. Because technically you weren't supposed to be at work. You were supposed to be in school.
There's a lot to say.
That's right. So how did you learn how to speak English so well?
By speaking it, I suppose. And reading.
But you associated with Yiddish-speaking people all the time at work, so how did you learn English?
By reading, I guess, later when I learned to read a little and more and more. And
you learned to read more or less by yourself?
Yeah, all by myself, because I was ashamed to say that I didn't go to school.
Mm-hmm. And so where did you get your books?
The books I got, I tell you, I didn't progress until I married my husband. And he was a very learned man. First of all, he came out of a yeshiva. Then he left the yeshiva to become a social democrat. And he worked as a... with the Germans, he went to Berlin and he went to school there. it's a new chapter.
Where did he come from?
Riga.
We're talking about your first husband now.
Hmm?
We're talking about your first husband.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Margolis. He came from Riga.
Yeah.
You know who else came from? You know. I mean, I have to tell you. Big union leader. I'll remember the name in a minute. He wrote the Loose Leaves. Hillquit.
Hillquit, yeah.
He was from Riga.
A lawyer in Riga.
Yeah. And so your first husband was from Riga, and he was a very learned man, ex-Yeshiva Bucher. He was a social democrat.
Social democrat, then he became a revolutionist. And he went to speak for the Germans, and for the Russians,
mm-hmm,
for the Lettish. They speak
mm-hmm.
Lettish there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lettish never knew that he was a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like a Let or a German.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Why did he leave? Was it because...
For the revolution.
1905? Because it didn't sustain.
1907 he came here.
Mm-hmm. Why did he come to Pittsburgh, do you know?
In Johnstown he came first. He had family there, uncles and aunts and cousins and all.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to Johnstown and got a job right away as a watchmaker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he had a trade.
Oh, yeah, he was a watchmaker. His father and his grandfather all were watchmakers.
You can go play outside if you want to on the porch. You don't want to. She's getting bored.
Yes.
It won't take that much more. I just have a few more questions to ask this lady. Okay, sweetie? And then he came to Pittsburgh.
He came to look for a store, for a business.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that's $500.
Mm-hmm.
So he got the $500 and he came to Pittsburgh to buy a store.
Mm-hmm.
And he did find one.
How did you meet him?
This is when we went to a lecture to hear Debs.
Oh, I want to hear. You went with your friends to hear Eugene
Debs. How do you know?
I'm asking you.
Oh.
How do I know? I'm saying you went to hear.
I went with my friends, with Oshry, Mrs. Oshry, Molly.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Molly. I don't know if she's living there yet or not.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole crowd of girls we were. And I always...
You were about 20 years old then.
18, 19 years old. I don't want this to be on the record.
Because you said you went, lived about a year, then you moved to another place, and then you lived in this other place near Franklin School for how long?
Just about a year.
Another year. And then where did you move?
Then we moved to Aaron Street.
Oh, and then you moved to Aaron Street?
And this is where I got married.
Oh.
I lived there a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Did your married sister keep in touch?
Huh?
Your married sister, did she keep in touch? She married here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah. She married in Pittsburgh. And they moved to the south side, up on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We talked about work a little bit. You went on strike. What happened if you didn't succeed in the strike? Now, you said you were one of the first people that went out on strike, and then you were on strike, and then you just were forced back to work without getting any of your requests?
Yeah.
Because
we had
because
to go
out
on another
in.
Strike.
Because they didn't give in, and you had to work.
We had to work, so we went back. The strike was broken, they call it.
The strike was broken.
Yeah. And, then we had to have another strike. We went out again and again.
Mm-hmm.
About every year or so, we had to go out on the strike. Or they told us that we had to stay out.
Mm-hmm.
Put us out.
Lockout. And yet you still managed to work there for 8 years.
Yeah, well, in a different factory, but...
Oh, you didn't continue at Standard?
No, I worked there, I think, for about 3-4 years.
And then?
Then I quit, and I went to work in a smaller place. Two brothers had a factory on...
What was the name of the...
Levine's, I think they were called.
Mm-hmm.
Levine.
Did you know Simon Mazur's factory?
Yeah, Mazur.
There's
a big family Mazur in California now, and we keep in touch.
From this Simon Mazur?
Yeah.
Is Sally Mazur his daughter? That's a different Mazur.
These Mazur girls lived close by on Crawford Street. No, it wasn't Crawford.
Was one of them Sally Mazur?
Sally Mazur.
Is she the daughter of Simon Mazur? Do you know?
They come from Youngstown, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
The girls that I married, I'm talking about the fellow that I know, Mazur. He was a Mazur here in Pittsburgh. Have you married the girls?
No, I'm talking about Sally Mazur didn't get married, a single woman. She's the head of the baby home.
Her, I don't know.
I'm just wondering.
But maybe she's a different Mazur, different.
I know Simon Mazur, I think, had a son named Solly Mazur that was known in the area. He was very active politically or something like that.
Yeah, I remember the name.
The reason I'm interested is because one of the men I interviewed, Mr. Rubenstein, told me that Simon Mazur was from Ukraine. And I know my family, my mother's family, there's a Mazur group.
Oh.
And I was wondering if I was related, but...
No,
okay, so
it's too far back.
Yeah. Can you tell me about meeting Robert? How old were you when you got married?
I was 19.
And he?
And he was 25.
And he was no longer Orthodox. He had already become Ohio. Well, how did your parents react to your engagement? Were they happy?
Oh, they loved him.
They did. The fact that he wasn't religious didn't...
They didn't know about it before. It's off.
No, it isn't. It's on.
They didn't know at first.
Mm-hmm. In other words, when they were introduced, he made an impression of a learned young man and so on.
They just fell in love with him. And he didn't have nerve enough to... we were very poor. Mm-hmm. I from my side, he on his side. When he bought the business, paid the man the $500 he had, and he didn't leave any money to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
He forgot about the rent. He thought that $500 he thought would take care of the rent. So the man said that no man thought can gain an office. And we shy, yes, I can't still. Naya.
Yeah.
Kennen. Oh, yeah, yeah, sagt er. Natürlich. Die sprachen Deutsch, natürlich.
Uh-huh.
Ja, ja, man muss doch zahlen.
Ja.
Aber so,
so what was he paying him the 500 for? Just for the stock?
The safe and the business, all the showcases.
In other words, he didn't buy the place, he just bought the stock and so on. He didn't buy
the stock and the pictures.
But it was just a tenant. He had to keep the rent up. Uh-huh. So what did he do?
So he told him if he would be kind enough to hold the store for him for another month. And then, of course, the merchandise that he had sold, he kept the money.
Mm-hmm.
But he was working, he held the doors open. And he went out to the mining towns, and there he met a man. Ella.
What?
Allen's.
Mm-hmm.
There is a store here, Allen Brothers, in the garment.
A-L-L-O-N.
Yeah, Allen. You know him?
I know the name.
The old man, I don't know if he's living, he used to, last year, but
gotcha,
a year or two ago, I used to visit him here as a not an old age home, like a convalescent home on Whiteman Street. There's where I saw him last, that old man. Anyway, this old man and his brother had a general store in a mining town, which I forgot the name of the mining town. And my husband came there with a Pat Kelly tools. And hungry he was, he saw his store, he said, I'll go in and I'll buy something to eat. They asked him if there's a place where he can sleep over. Ja, kom daar, ze zien twee vrienden van die store.
Mm-hmm.
En ze gaan hem schallen.
Mm-hmm.
En dat zegt hij, als je komt door, als je kennen mag, net nog gedalen. Ze met zo'n erin, want ik heb dat store. En dan is dat erin. Maar Kim, is dus... Fixing watches.
Mm-hmm. He'd probably do other things too, fix other things.
Yeah, other things too. He did. Musical instruments, and so forth. Anyway, he put out a little sign he made, put it in the window, that they can fix the watch here, or any other in the jewelry line, though they didn't have any jewelry.
in a mining town. For such a poor rats like we were.
And then I'd like to ask you now, which organizations you joined. Were you a member of the Workmen's Circle?
Yeah.